Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at redrock_bball, facebook.com/redrockbasketball. The email address is redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. And of course, the new YouTube channel, which you can check out without a fancy URL at this point, but head across there and subscribe, and that will allow me to get a fancy URL. Now, the NBA season finished today, so now we switch full on into NBA draft mode. So I thought perfect time for us to do an NBA draft preview. And in order to do that, I've brought in the big guns, an expert, Ed Isaacson, who runs the website NBA Draft Blog. Welcome, Ed.
Hey, Josh. How you doing?
I'm going very, very well. What did you think overall of the finals today?
Even with Cleveland being undermanned, I really expect them to put up a bigger fight in Game 6. And, I was fully expecting to see a 7-game series, especially with the way LeBron has been playing. But in the end, that Golden State team is a special group. And, once they seized control of that game, they just didn't let up. And it was a lot of fun to watch them this year.
That's it. Once they get a stranglehold, they just choke the life out of the, like, that game just felt like that at the end it was over for so long, until the end when J.R. Smith started hitting those shots. But it just felt like they just squeezed the life out of the whole building, basically. It was a bit of a weird feeling, but they deserved it. They were the best team, clearly, all season. Now, Ed, where can everyone find you on Twitter?
Twitter at NBA Draft Blog.
And the website is the NBA Draft Blog. It's over on Hoops Habit. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's part of the Fansided Network. That's where you can find the scouting reports and interviews and that sort of work. And you can also find me on the NBA sports websites, Pro Basketball Talk and Roto World. And that's where you'll find, my mock draft and, top 10 lists and things that are sort of geared to more of, the casual fan.
Yep. So he's all over the place. So you can check it out. He's got the scouting reports up on the NBA draft blog on Fansided. There is the Roto World stuff that you do, where you're putting up top power forwards, top point guards, top small forwards, all by position rankings, all that sort of stuff. It's a ton of information, Ed, that you're providing, and it's guys like me who aren't studying this stuff, 365 days of the year. It's great for me to catch up on it. Now, that's a bit of background about yourself. How long have you been doing this draft coverage?
Actually, a couple of weeks ago was the 5th anniversary of the site. So just a little over 5 years. And this is the 5th draft I'll be covering.
And obviously, it's a huge passion for you. What made you go into the sort of the draft aspect of it? Like, I know we were talking before about you're a basketball guy. You wanted to push yourself into a basketball field. But what drives you towards the draft?
I think it's my love of the college basketball game. I'm not going to say I'm not an NBA fan or that college basketball is better than the NBA, but I love everything about the college game. And especially watching, as players develop during their years in college, whether it's 1 year, 4 years. And I've always been a draft junkie ever since, probably the first draft I saw, 25 years ago. So, it just seemed a natural thing. I've always loved the scouting aspect of basketball. I was always sort of drawn to that. So that just seemed to be a place where, whatever talent I had at the time, I think could be put to use.
Hey, if it's something you love doing and then you're able to turn it into something that you can do for work, it's always a win for you. And, the work that comes out of it is better in the end anyway. And we can see that by reading the stuff that you put out. It's very in-depth and it's very useful. Now, let's get into this draft. Ed, just quickly, this draft compared to last year, how do you see it? We were told about 2014 being like a super draft. Do you see this one as equal in quality, deeper, more spread out? How do you see this comparing sort of on a overall sense compared with last season's 2014 class?
I think overall it's probably as deep and there's as much talent. I think where the talent is and where the value is in this draft is a little different than last year. I think my opinion differs a little from most. I'm not a huge fan of this potential lottery sort of after the, your top two big guys. But once we get towards the end of the lottery and then through the first round and into the beginning of the second round, I love the amount of talent there. The amount of talent that I think is ready or close to ready to contribute at the NBA level. And I think those are the guys who I think we'll see make more of a long-term impact. I think a lot of guys are going to end up being a bit undervalued, where the lottery guys are a bit overvalued. I think once we get towards the mid to end first round, you have a lot of guys who seem to be a bit undervalued.
That's the part of the draft I really like, that mid sort of 15 onto 25, 26. I reckon that there's a ton of interesting guys. We'll talk about some of them soon, but I reckon that's a really interesting portion of the draft. There's a lot of names who can go at one spot, or you could think they could go 10 spots later or 10 spots earlier, and a lot of talented players around that area. Let's focus a bit now on the top of the draft. Okay, so at the start of the season, how different is your sort of top 15 players from the start of the season as to now, after we've had a whole season going through of college ball, international play, and workouts, draft combines? How much change do you see in your set of top 15 guys, or that range?
One thing I try to do, especially heading into a season, is really not try to think a lot, think along those lines of, looking, who I might think are the top guys. I mean, some guys, obviously, you just know are going to be considered in that group, especially the lottery is always sort of, freshman dominated, sometimes a couple of sophomores. So I think for the most part, the guys we expected to be one and done players, that's what we ended up with. Your Towns, your Okafors, guys like Kelly Oubre, and even guys who had bad years like Cliff Alexander, are all sort of, we expected them to be in the draft and they are. But there are definitely some surprises. I don't think anyone really expected D'Angelo Russell to be in the conversation as a top five pick at all, let alone after his freshman year. So we do see, cases like that where a guy sort of sneaks up out of nowhere and, makes a name for himself during the year and, changes everything for him.
Are you like cautious with that, where a guy who enters the season with no hype whatsoever ends the season with a top five pick? Are you cautious that there's something that was missed during the season, that he's not necessarily fooling people, but there's something that college coaches didn't adjust to? Why wasn't he thought of that highly before the season? Or is it just a case of people developing at different times and him coming into his own at that right time of the year? Because, as you said, no one had really talked about Russell at all at the start of the season. Now he's, people saying, maybe he's the best player in the draft. He's a definite top three. He's a top five guy. But we never would have said that, 8, 9, 10 months ago. Is it worrying at all?
I think there's a combination of both. Russell, you can't deny that he played well. But, and it's something I've talked about since the end of the college season is, there is a little bit of smoke and mirrors with his numbers. The skill, obviously, if you're watching, the skill is there, but people seem to be fixated a lot on numbers. And his numbers are some that really seem to pop out to people, especially people who didn't really pay attention to him. So I think there's a lot to be, cautious with him. Especially when, we're talking about a guy who could be the number, a top two or three pick in this draft. I think it was floors, a lot of situations in the college season where he had difficulties. And there's no real expectation he's going to be able to avoid, those same issues when he becomes a pro, when they may actually become worse in some cases. There's definitely a need to, to sort of learn every little bit about a guy, you can before you sort of, set your opinion on him and where he should be in the draft.
Because that's true. What you say about the numbers in the college game compared to NBA game, there's 30 teams. We understand how they all play. They're playing against each other. In college, we're talking 300 plus teams not playing against each other. Different levels of competition. Lots of differences in terms of pace and style. And numbers don't always mean what they appear on the surface. So what you say is important there, of being able to watch the guys and get an idea. Is this real? Is this replicable? All that sort of stuff, I think, is really important to know, because you can't get it just from looking at numbers in a spreadsheet.
And I think, and that's what, it becomes sort of one of my biggest pet peeves around draft time is, come the end of the college season and as the NBA playoffs start, everyone wants to jump into, giving their draft opinions, and making their attempts to, break down the games of guys. And, it's sort of easy to do, a surface take on what a guy's game is, by watching a couple of games, seeing some clips. But to really understand, a guy's skills and, how good he actually is, you really have to know not just him, but you have to know his teammates. You have to know his coach. You have to know the system. You have to know the opponents, to really get the right perspective on, how good these guys really are.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, in that sort of vein, is there a player on that you are much higher on than, say, other people around, where you see other sites, mock drafts or other draft analysts? Who's someone that you are higher on than the majority of other people?
If you said a couple of months ago, I would have said Cameron Payne, but everyone sort of seemed to catch up on that one. And everyone's on board now.
Yep.
I think the one guy that I look at, and it's not like he's, projected to be drafted low, but I look at Bobby Portis out of Arkansas, and, I watch him, and I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being, one of the top four or five guys, who came out of this draft once we're 10 years down the line and look at his NBA career.
Yeah, look, I think the Portis, he's in a position to me that no matter who picks him, I feel like he's going to be able to even have some sort of impact straight away. Like, I don't know if that's far off the mark, but he could go in that 14 to 18, maybe even a bit higher. But there's lots of teams that could use him as a guy off the bench, and he could have a real impact, probably bigger than five or six of the guys picked in front of him. So I think he's especially from guys looking at from a fantasy point of view, I think he could jump in with some pretty significant value early on, because he does have a very he's a good player. I'll put it that way. He's a very good player, and you're hearing a lot of hype about him coming out, or starting to come out now. Anyway, I'm starting to hear a bit more hype on him. Is there a player that you are much lower on than everyone else? Is there somewhere you go, this guy, no way he should be going here. I don't know why people are projecting him to go at pick whatever. Is there someone where you just go, nah, not for me, this guy?
I think we could spend the next hour with me doing that. But, we've already mentioned Russell. When I look at the guy, I'm not convinced he's a top three kind of pick. Emmanuel Mudiay is another one. I think people sort of fall into the trap of, seeing the size and a bit of athleticism, and you just project, what he may be way further than, is probably warranted at this point. Even looking at, the two big international names, Hezonja and Porzingis. I mean, I'm not going to say they're not good players. I mean, they're certainly skilled, but the hype sort of surrounding them, especially in the last couple weeks, has been like nothing I've ever seen. And I think over the past few years, people had started to become a bit more cautious with the international players, and that's sort of just been thrown out the window with these two. And I think people's expectations are going to be a bit out of line of what they'll probably be at the NBA level.
Yeah, Porzingis in particular lately, he's been getting some ridiculous buzz. You just hear, I feel like there's about three or four rumors every day. There was the talk, I think, came out yesterday about that he'd had a private workout with the Lakers, putting him in contention for the number two pick. We've heard him being touted as the best overall player in this class. Where do you see him going? I've heard a lot of people saying maybe Philadelphia. Does that feel too high to you?
It certainly feels too high. But over the last couple of years, since Sam Hinkie has taken over in Philadelphia, it wouldn't surprise me if that was something he did. But do I think they'd be getting great value for him? No. I think Orlando at five is another place where, there's a really good chance of him going. I think the fit may be a little bit better there for him. But even then, I think that's a bit high. I know people have the fascination with his size. He's definitely a skilled shooter, but I'm not 100% convinced that we're not just looking at a guy who's going to be nothing more than really a spot shooter at the NBA level.
He seems desperate to try and dispel any sort of talk of him being soft because he's European. I understand his frustration with that you can't just classify all people together just because he's tall and European and he's a good shooter doesn't make him soft. But it's definitely something that's hanging over his head at the moment. He's going to have to work hard, especially with a body the shape of what his is. He's going to have to do a lot of work to disprove that. I think people are going to automatically assume that until he goes out and proves it otherwise. Now, Hezonja is another guy I saw today. I don't know where I saw it. I think it was on Grantland. They were talking about Hezonja, and they were saying the attitude of Kobe Bryant with the shooting of Klay Thompson. That felt a little high to me in terms of comparison and praise. What's your take on him?
Well, the attitude part is right. And
I have heard. I actually, there's a listener to this podcast who is from Croatia, and he's played junior basketball, I think, with Hezonja, and he said, yeah, he thinks he's the best player every single time, no matter who's he's playing against. So I'm not shocked at that.
Yeah, and I mean, he's already made statements, I mean, months ago, saying that if he had played college basketball, he'd be the number one pick in the draft. And for a guy who hasn't accomplished much in terms of what he was able to do in Europe, he has a very high opinion, which, to a point, there's nothing wrong with that. You want confident players. But you have to remember, this was a guy who, he's still just 19 years old, but at the highest level of European basketball, he was a role player, nothing more. There were times he was just buried deep, on the Barcelona bench. I'm not sure, if he's expecting that, if he comes to the NBA, that they're just gonna, take him on his word and say, he's ready to come play. I think the adjustment for him is going to be, probably even bigger than Porzingis, because in his mind, he thinks he's the number one option.
As Porzingis either. Porzingis played a bigger role in Spain than what Hezonja did. He barely played for Barcelona in comparison to what Porzingis did.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit different situations. Barcelona is Spain's top team, yep. Or along with Real Madrid. But how is someone like him going to adjust to you know, when he's, if he's on the floor being the fourth or fifth option, you know, that the ball may not get to him that often. And if it does, he has to be prepared to give it up to one of the actual, you know, to one of the stars of the team. You know, so I think his own expectations may be a little bit ahead of, you know, what he's actually capable of, especially in his first couple of years.
You touched on campaign before. Now, there are a lot of this group of sort of mid to late first round point guards. So out of the guys like Payne, Tyus Jones, Jerian Grant, DeLon Wright, Terry Rozier, I'm assuming Payne's the guy you like the most. Is there any of that other group that you think is in a similar class to Payne, or are they all a tier or two below him?
If I was to, you know, they're very different and they bring different things. You know, Jerian Grant has size, maturity, you know, he's skilled. And I think that will all translate well, to the NBA. And obviously he grew up around the game, with his father Harvey and his uncle Horace. You know, so he knows what's expected of him. And I wouldn't be surprised, if he does very well, even immediately, depending on what team he goes to. Even a Tyus Jones, who I wouldn't say I'm high on him, but I can see where, you know, he would certainly bring values to some teams, especially as a backup point guard with his sort of ability to, to control the floor when he has the ball and, you know, a tremendous passer and, you know, his work with, Jahlil Okafor, since they were just starting high school, you know, it's really taught him to be, a great post passer, which you don't see a lot of anymore.
No, his passing skills are pretty advanced for a guy coming out of college.
Yeah, the thing with him is just he doesn't have that athleticism and, the speed that, you see in the NBA these days, especially if you're not going to have the size, you should have the speed. He doesn't really seem to have either.
Yeah, that's definitely a sort of a limiting factor for his role. But there are teams picking in that range where he'll get picked where there's definite need at point guard. So from a fantasy point of view, those guys, while they might not be elite prospects, they could fit into a role where, say on Dallas or, as a backup for Washington, maybe getting 20 minutes a night, Houston still, unsure point guard situation. There's a lot of roles there where there are openings for point guards for some of those teams in that range where those guys will get picked. So there's a few names to watch out depending on sort of where they fit. Now, we talked, or you mentioned earlier about Cliff Alexander. Now, he was disappointing this season for Kansas. He's likely going to go in the second round. Another guy, a big name, a high-profile player like Andrew Harrison from Kentucky, is probably going to go in the second round. There's Aaron Harrison, who probably won't get drafted at all. Now, they're going to go late. Not a huge amount of second-round players do much of any consequence in the NBA. There are obviously examples. Paul Millsap's a second-round player. Chandler Parsons was a second-round draft pick. Is there a hope for these guys to realize their potential, especially Alexander, who has such enormous potential? Can they turn it around, or were they found out at college at that level? Was it like, we're not progressing from here? Yeah, you dominated high school ball, but once you get to the next level, it just hasn't turned it on. Is there a hope for these guys?
I think so, especially with a guy like Alexander, who is still really raw in a lot of ways. His game coming out of high school was just strictly power. So I think there's a lot of room for him to grow there. And if he can go to the right situation, especially with a team with a strong, development track or, a good D League team that works hard at, building skills and players. I certainly wouldn't give up on them at this point.
Do you think there's more of a future for Alexander than say Harrison?
That's tough only because, I've certainly have never been a fan of either of the Harrison twins games, but you know, Andrew Harrison at least has proved him, you know, proven himself over two seasons at Kentucky, you know, being put in pressure situations and, you know, regardless of whether he actually performed well or not, you know, he's sort of been through a lot already. And, you know, my big quibble with him has always been, I just don't see him as a point guard. I always thought if he was going to have a shot at the league, it was going to have to be, you know, sliding over to the two. But, you know, he's, you know, been doing workouts as a point guard. And some team may give him a shot to try and keep developing that way. But, you know, there reaches a point, you know, and some will disagree with me, but I think the toughest thing to sort of develop as a point guard, and especially, you know, once you make the move BA, is, you know, how you process and how you make decisions. And he's a very, very, very poor decision maker. And, you know, I'm not sure if, but, you know, being at the pro level, whether it's in the D League or on an NBA bench, is really going to improve that for him. Whereas a guy like Alexander, you know, he's pretty much a clean slate. You know, even before, you know, the NCAA investigation sort of ended his season early, you know, he hadn't really found himself any kind of role in Bill Self's offense. But when he did get on the floor for extended minutes, you know, there were a lot of things there was to like about him. You know, again, that power around the basket. You know, he showed some skill on the defensive end. He can rebound. You know, so it's sort of a good base for a team to work with him.
So, to me, he's someone that I've, in terms of dynasty fantasy leagues, looking for someone as a guy that maybe is going to develop into something 2 or 3 years down the track. I think he's a really interesting guy to target. Is there someone else you like who's probably projected to go in that second round that you think could be a player, maybe like we saw with Jordan Clarkson last season, or someone who you really like the potential of, but they're going to go late in the draft?
I think there's a couple of guys, and, you know, it's sort of, you know, not really telling, you know, where they're going to, you know, fall in this group. But I look at a guy like Jordan Mickey, who may sneak into the first round, but is, you know, likely to be a second round pick. I think his ability to defend and protect the rim is, you know, will make him valuable to a team and possibly even right away. So I think he should be able to get sort of the minutes quickly, depending on his situation, where he can do something and put up numbers, especially on the defensive end. You know, his teammate Jarrell Martin is another one who, you know, there's a good possibility that he's going to, you know, be a mid to late first round pick. But with this year's draft, there's guys are going to fall for no reason, you know, not through anything they did, just because the talent level is sort of even. But I think sort of the ultimate guy when you're talking about this is Robert Upshaw. Because there's so many question marks involved with him. But still a lot to like about, the potential pro that he can be. That if everything sort of lines up correctly for him, we have a guy who could conceivably make a big impact at the NBA level.
Yeah, we're talking about a guy who can have that sort of potential impact like what Hassan Whiteside did last season. Like his numbers, I know we talked about before, don't look too much into numbers, but in 25 minutes he blocked 4.5 shots a game. And that's huge, like absolutely massive what he's able to do. His rebounding's there, but as you mentioned, the off-court concerns, you're dismissed from two programs. Then you got the health issues as well. Is that something that's going to keep him potentially completely out of the draft, just out of the first round, so that people don't have to guarantee him a contract? How worrying is it for him and his sort of draft prospects?
You know, I think I'm sort of surprised we still haven't really heard anything yet about the further testing with the heart issue, especially coming up on, you know, only 8 days to the draft. So I think it's safe, you know, to rule out at this point that, you know, he's not going to be working out at all for anyone else, probably, you know, till the draft, which sort of limits him in a way. But, you know, you look at some of these teams like a Philadelphia that has like five second round draft picks. You know, a couple other teams have multiple picks. You know, or teams that really don't have a need they need to fill right away. There's no, I could see him still going high in the second round. You know, and even if somehow they're able to get, you know, a clean bill of health with the blood testing from his, you know, for the heart issue, there's still a chance he could sneak into the end of the first round. Again, a team that doesn't really have a lot of needs to fill, but they, you know, knows that if they sort of nurture Upshaw, you know, they can sort of help him with the, you know, the off the court issues he's dealt with, and sort of monitor him closely to make sure there's nothing with the physical issues.
Yeah, he is. It's almost like a not a lottery ticket that you could potentially cash, but there's a lot there. Just so many things just pushing against it, which makes it really tough. Now, a question, Ed: a favorite player of yours in the draft? It doesn't have to be any particular guidelines. You like them for whatever reason, but who is your favorite player? Not necessarily best NBA prospect, not best college prospect, but just someone you go, this is my guy. This is the guy that I like a lot.
You know, Cameron Payne, we've talked about already, is one. I think the other guy is Portis, who we mentioned. The last would probably be Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, which is would surprise a lot of people because I've been very critical of him over his 2 years. But I think at the NBA level, his ability to defend is going to translate well. It's going to be something that could get him minutes right away. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's, you know, for 3-4 years down the line and he's starting in the NBA. So, you know, in terms of, again, I won't go as far as saying I'm a huge fan of him or his game, but in a guy that I'm the most interested in seeing how he sort of develops from here, it would probably be him.
All right. Now, Wisconsin, two guys that are pretty, not divisive prospects, but Frank Kaminsky and Sam Decker, who people I think are down on them. Like, you see them, don't expect too much of them. They're not going to be good pros necessarily. Who do you see being the better pro, or do you think they're both going to be, you know, pretty decent players, or they're both going to be busts, so to speak?
I think long term, Decker has the better shot of being the better player. I think once he gets to the better spacing of the NBA level, it will do a lot for him. I think he was sort of held back a bit in the Wisconsin offense, which is very structured. You know, and for someone as athletic as he is, he didn't get a chance to really show it as much. And, you know, 6'9" small forwards are a luxury still. And, you know, if he can ever sort of become a consistent perimeter shooter, you know, then again, we're looking at a guy who is probably, you know, could probably be a starter, at the NBA level, probably for a good team. Kaminsky is he'll make the bigger impact short term. He already had, you know, there's a defined role for him at the NBA level. You know, he's going to come in, you know, at almost 7'1", you know, and be able to stretch the floor with his shooting ability. You know, and depending on the matchups, you know, he's a skilled low post player. You know, the guy knows how to score. So, you know, he'll make more of an impact right away, especially in a team. If he goes to a team where, you know, the offense will sort of fit his talents, you know, running pick and pops with him. or even just having him spot up in the corners. He'll do well with that. So I think there's a good chance they're both going to end up with good NBA careers. But if you had to pick one, I would just sort of, say there's a Decker's upside will be something to really keep an eye on.
Miles Turner's a guy that I like a lot, but we hear these problems of his hips and his running style and his gait that it could potentially be issues. Is that something when you look at him and you see the what sort of impact it has on him? Does it dissuade you from taking him in the lottery, or do you think that the talent is enough there that you take that risk on that health inside the top 14 picks?
I think the biggest the biggest thing to talk about when you mention it is the fact that him and his family have been proactive about it and have already, sought help to fix it, which is huge. But even with something like that, it's not like, if we go back a couple of years, Jared Sullinger's back issue, where, the likelihood of him being injured, of hurting his back, was considered to be great. Turner's running style, I think, there's a chance that long term it would start to affect him, but there's a good chance that it wouldn't have. But the fact that he's been proactive, meeting with renowned doctors to deal with it, and do sort of strengthening exercises to help him, sort of not only alleviates any concerns about it, but sort of makes you think a little bit more about him. The fact that, that he's doing this already and, someone at, just 18 years old is really, focused on these kind of things. And that's great to see. I think even without it, because everyone sort of noticed his choppy, awkward running style, early on, at Texas. But I still think his skill set, his size, his potential, would have overrode that. Even if he wasn't getting fixed, he probably still would have been a lottery pick.
Okay. Predictions. Have you got any sort of crazy, outlandish predictions for this draft? Like, I think that, certain player is going to go in the lottery when it just feels sort of way out there, even if there's only a 10% chance of it happening. What's a crazy prediction you've got for this draft?
There's sort of one thought that's been, I can't seem to shake over, say the last, month or so, is this idea that, when we look back at this draft, 5, 6, 7 years down the line, that Trey Lyles ends up being the best player, in the 2015 class. There's so much to like about his game, about his demeanor. I just think there's so much to work with in the right situation for a team.
Let's transition now to a little bit more of fantasy stuff. Now, this might be a tough one to answer, but in terms of not necessarily from a talent standpoint, but is there a player out there that really sort of projects as a high fantasy guy? Like last year, we saw with Mitch McGarry, obviously not the best player in the draft, but a guy that was project when he would put up numbers, he'd put them up big in limited minutes. So you knew when he'd get a big role that the numbers would start flowing. Is there a guy like that in this draft who's just a guy who racks up counting stats, racks up big numbers on a sort of a per-minute basis, but not necessarily is the best player? Is there anyone you can sort of see along those lines?
I think the two guys to sort of really look at for this, especially in the short term, are Moutier and Russell. They're both sort of versatile. They're going to score. They can rebound. They're going to get their assists. They like to take some gambles on defense, so they'll pick up some steals. And I think they're both going to be in such bad situations that they're go and just go out and put up numbers. Yeah, so I think, you know, I wouldn't trust either of them to be the point guard of a team, you know, a winning team. But in terms of being able to put up numbers, yeah, I could see them easily, you know, being, you know, sort of those guys who, you know, maybe even every game by the end of their first year are putting up, you know, sort of, you know, 20 points, you know, 5-6 rebounds, 7-8 assists a game.
So we're talking like, yeah, that's sort of Tyreek Evans rookie year sort of level numbers.
Yeah, you look at, you know, and yeah, guys like that, you know, a Brandon Jennings type, you know, guys who, you know, it's not, you know, they're not going to win games for you,
yeah.
but they, you know, because of the situations they're in, they're going to have the opportunity, which is going to be the biggest thing for rookies when it comes to fantasy, is the opportunity. And I think any of those two.
Now let's dial it back a little bit to last season. You may not have as, you know, great a recall on everything that you wrote about the guys last season, but there's a couple of things we need to touch on. Players who potentially are coming over this season. Nikola Jokic appears to be almost guaranteed to be coming over to the Denver Nuggets, and there's a lot of word coming out about Dario Saric coming across to Philadelphia. Even though his contract, from what I understand, he doesn't have a full out clause until after next season. Have you heard anything about Saric coming across, and how do you see their games translating if they do happen to come across this season?
Well, I think Philadelphia would love to, you know, get him over here. But again, you know, the buyout is a potential issue. And I would really be surprised if we saw him at this point next year. I think, you know, the Philadelphia front office and Sarge himself are sort of prepared to ride out, the rest of his contract. You know, I think he'll be a good role player in the NBA, you know, with his skill. You know, we're not talking about a potential star. But in the right offense, with the right talent around him, you know, his ability to pass, you know, to shoot, you know, will translate well. And I think the same sort of goes, you know, for Jokic. It's, you know, the one thing I'm sort of trying to figure out with Denver is, you know, trying to see, you know, a Nurkic Jokic front court, you know, how that works together. And if one sort of become, you know, if Nurkic's, you know, versatility, sort of pushes Nurkic, you know, down, you know, to the bench a bit more. But I mean, he's still going to need time to adjust to the NBA game, no matter how well he played. Over in Europe. But I think his ability to sort of stretch the floor, rebound, you know, and sort of play with the toughness you need for the NBA, will all help him. And, you know, he may not, you know, play much, you know, in the beginning of the next season, but, you know, by the end of next year, I think, you know, Denver should start to see some value from him.
Now, sticking with 2014, I mentioned at the start how, you know, heralded a class it was, but a lot of the guys struggled. Is there a player that you really liked before the draft that you saw struggle a bit last season that you think that we can see, you know, have a bit of a bounce back season? Like, we saw it with 2013. That class was killed. It was, you know, this is the worst class ever. But then a lot of those players in their second season really started to shine. Guys that, you know, started to come through. Victor Oladipo took a big step. Shabazz Muhammad looked like he was actually an NBA player, not whatever we saw in his rookie season. Are there guys that were rookies last season that you can see taking a similar step this year?
Yeah, I mean, one that sticks out to me right away is Doug McDermott. You know, I think what, you know,
I'm glad you said that,
with the early injury, you know, I think that set him back a bit. And he just never found the offense just never really fit his talents. I think Fred Hoiberg is going to do wonders for him in terms of getting him the looks he needs. Because, I mean, there's no doubt the guy's a good shooter. So it's just being able to put him consistently in spots where he'll get his shots. And I think that's one of the big things Fred Hoiberg will bring to Chicago. So, I depending on what the lineups look like and, especially with Mirotić out there, what kind of time McDermott will get. But if he gets time on the floor, I think, we'll definitely see a more confident player.
Because that's I'm glad you said that, because I think the same thing. I think the change in offense is going to do wonders for him. It was not a good season for him, obviously, but there's so many factors. The injury you mentioned, the coaching, the fact that Thibodeau basically just refuses to play rookies. Even Mirotić struggled at times to get decent minutes. And that brings me to a question I had emailed from a listener, Tim, who asked me this question a week ago, and I answered with McDermott. But his question was, do you like Doug McDermott or Devin Booker more as a prospect? I went with McDermott. Which way do you lean?
As a prospect, I like Booker. Just again, we're talking about, I have to check the exact numbers, but he may be the youngest guy in this draft. He had great shooting ability. Again, I think there's so much more he can add to his game. McDermott, we know what McDermott is. He'll never be more than that. I think, Booker will bring the shooting ability, but I think he'll be a better defender at the NBA level than McDermott is. And I think once he's a little bit more comfortable, he's a very smart player, and I think he'll be able to start, being put in situations where he can create a bit for others too, especially when he draws, defenders out because of his shooting ability. I think we'll see, he could be a special player.
Interesting. I hadn't heard as many sort of positive remarks on Booker as what you just said there. That's definitely some food for thought. Now, Ed, we had a few questions come through on Twitter. You are ready to answer some of those?
Absolutely.
Okay, so Barry Baker will start off. He is the a guy who asked me so many questions for the podcast. So it's Barry Baker, the podcast question maker. His question is, do you see Karl-Anthony Towns being a key part of the Timberwolves rotation right at the start of the regular season? So it's assuming he goes number one, which it appears likely. Do you see him just slotting right in there and being a 30-minute guy straight away?
I don't know about 30 minutes right away. I think, there's going to be conditioning issues. Not to say that he's out of shape, but it's a big adjustment. To the NBA style. I think he's going to be, he's going to be their guy. If they pick him number one, he's going to be their guy. And, I expect them to play him as much as they possibly can, with sort of the idea of not trying, not wearing him out too soon. So that you may see him playing 30 minutes a game, by March, if that means only playing 18 to 20 minutes in November and December.
Daniel Grzelak asks a couple of questions. We touched on one a little bit earlier. He said, which teams are going to give the rookies the biggest minutes? So, Philadelphia is obviously one of those. But generally, the teams at the bottom of the draft are going to be looking to push their rookies most because they're the most talent thin. Would you agree with that?
If you look at, the top of this draft, Minnesota has some good pieces already. So, they still have room for one of the, whichever big guy they pick, if it's Towns or Okafor. Philadelphia has a void. I mean, the Lakers, I think, only have six guys under contract. So whoever they draft, is going to end up playing a lot of minutes. The Knicks obviously have a lot of needs. Orlando, not as much. So it really depends on who they pick. Same with Sacramento. Denver is sort of retooling at this point. So there may be, openings for that, for a rookie to step in and play a lot of minutes there. Same with Detroit with Greg Monroe, leaving, even with the addition of Ilyasova, there could, if they end up drafting, another forward, they can get a lot of minutes. So yeah, I mean, it's variable, even with some of the better teams, depending on, the position and the team's need. You can see some of these guys get a lot of early minutes.
Daniel also asks, how much public posturing do teams really do, and how much is the truth? So how much is the stuff that we hear coming out true, 50%, 20%, or is it just all smoke screens?
We're talking maybe 5%, 10% at the most. And you sort of learn where to, what the source is, who the source is, or who's actually writing. You sort of know who their sources are probably. Most of the rumors are, if they're not outright silly, they're, if you just add, if you just use a little logic on it, you can see how it just falls apart. And people, a lot of people just really fail to do that. They just love to jump on some of these things. It's a valuable weapon for teams, to sort of, put these rumors out there, in a lot of ways. It helps them, and it happens too. I mean, it doesn't just happen with the teams. It happens with the agents and their players. They put a lot of things out there. So, you never know really. Most of the time you'll figure out that things aren't true, but even within that, there's often a little glimmer of truth in some of these things. Or at least something you could take from it that will lead you, in the direction the team really is going.
Philly808 asks, would you draft Porzingis over Russell if you had the third pick and Towns and Okafor are gone?
No, absolutely not. No. One, I just think, Russell will, the Sixers have added, they have some pieces there, and, I think Russell will sort of, be another piece for them at this point to at least make the team interesting, if nothing else. The Joel Embiid news, with the foot is, a little disconcerting, and that may change things a bit, because the idea was sort of, seeing this Noel Embiid, front court, possibly this upcoming year. But if Noel ends up staying at center, and if Sarge doesn't come over, then Porzingis, could play a stretch four, with that group, or even, just have let Noel and him sort of switch on and off, where they play. But I think if, for Philly fans to sort of be able to continue to support, Hinkie's vision, and the idea that the team is going to get better, I think Russell is the guy who will sort of, at least provide that spark and a little bit of excitement, that will keep, will keep fans interested.
I would also take Russell over Porzingis. Now, a couple of questions here about Emmanuel Mudiay. First one from Michael Audet, and then Barry Baker chimes in with another one. Michael asks, put Mudiay's talent in perspective. Is he or Marcus Smart a better prospect? And Barry chimes in just saying, which sort of player would you compare Mudiay to?
Just for the second one, I've never been a comparison guy, and I just never feel comfortable making those kind of things, because they just never seem right. So I don't know if I'll answer that.
No, that's fair enough.
I've always been a huge Marcus Smart fan, and I think I consider him a better prospect. Not only with his sort of ability to get to the basket, and that toughness and competitiveness, but the way he stepped in And, you know, almost dominated at times on the defensive end, for a rookie was just an unbelievable thing to watch. So even if, you know, even if his perimeter shooting never really takes that next big leap, you know, his ability to do everything else will sort of, you know, trump that. Mudiay, you know, there's still too many unknowns about him. And the one thing, but the one thing, you know, that I do know, it will be very surprising if he makes any kind of real impact on the defensive end.
Okay. So that could be a situation where it limits his court time as well. If he's just a complete defensive sieve, like Smart was obviously fantastic defensively, especially for a rookie. But that was always the hype on him coming in, that he was always going to be a great defender and the shooting was going to need work. And that's the way it panned out. But defense is something that can keep you on the court longer than necessarily a lack of a consistent outside shot. Now, Greg Taves asks, what would be the ideal team for Okafor? Not necessarily who will take him, but which team should he hope he lands on? So who's a team in a situation to maximize his talents? It's realistically going to be either Minnesota or Los Angeles. Which one of those do you see as being a better fit for Okafor?
I think LA would probably be a better fit for him, even though it may not be the best team dynamic, with having drafted Julius Randle last year, who's again, you know, more of your classic power forward playing around the basket. When your choice is whether to, you know, give precedence to Okafor or Randle, it's going to be Okafor. And you know, if you have to deal Randle, you deal Randle. So I think with Kobe Bryant's, you know, career, you know, nearing the end, Okafor would be in a great position to sort of be the centerpiece of, you know, who the Lakers build around for their future. You know, that wouldn't happen in Minnesota. That's Andrew Wiggins' team. And while I think he would do well there, and I think he would certainly help out, Wiggins and Rubio and make everybody a little bit better. He's not going to be the star there. Wiggins, that's Wiggins' team. But I mean, if I was looking at a team where I think is the best fit for Okafor, I think the Knicks would have been the perfect place for him. As long as, you know, Phil Jackson and Derek Fisher are continuing to want to make the triangle offense, the focal point of what the team does, I think Okafor's, his ability to score in the post and his passing ability would be great for them.
I would be highly doubtful he falls to four, but you never know. A lot of strange things do happen in the draft. Now, the last question here, Ed, comes from FC. I don't know what the actual name is, but let's go with that. Who do you think will be the best point guard from this draft and why?
Well, we've mentioned him a few times already. Cameron Payne. Yeah. I think he's the best long-term prospect in this group. It's a combination of a lot of things. I mean, we'll get the one knock out of the way. He just doesn't have the size that point guards seem to have coming in these days. But he has the speed to make up for it. He's already
on his size. It's not like he's Trey Burke. He's not like he's 5'11". He's 6'2". He's not a monster like Carter Williams and Dante Exum and Mudiay and that sort of size. But he's not Trey Burke size.
No, he's not. He's not Trey Burke size, but he's not. Here's where it becomes difficult is, how does he defend those guys?
Yeah.
That sort of becomes the issue, and especially for someone with his shooting ability. How is he going to get those? Where do those shots come from? When he has someone with a 6'11", 7 foot wingspan guarding him at the point guard position.
Yep.
I said, you know, I obviously I think he's the best long-term prospect. So I don't think the size is that big a deal, but there are things he's going to have to work around. But with his shooting ability, you know, his ability to see the floor, you know, just dynamic with the ball, you know, just finds ways to create shots, for himself and for his teammates. And while not a great defender, the tools are there for him to be a good defender. So he's the guy that, you know, I'm sort of the way I was looking at Elfrid Payton last year. Cameron Payton is, I'm looking at him that way this year.
All right, Ed, I think that's it. We're done. Excited? You excited for Thursday night or next Thursday night?
You know, it's always a, you know, sort of a bittersweet night. You know, so it's sort of the culmination of the whole year. But, you know, in reality, by the time it's done, I'm just exhausted. And I look forward to, you know, pumping out that last review, you know, for Roto World, of just recapping the draft, and being able to put this year's class behind me, you know, get ready for Summer League a bit and then start focusing on the next class. Because, you know, there's always going to be another group. So,
yep, exactly. It never. How long does it take you to get back into, say, the 2016 class? Like, how long do you take off before getting back into that?
It's usually the beginning of August. I mean, I've already started. You know, I've started putting together my spreadsheets and getting, you know, all the preparation I need to do the actual writing. But that I'll usually start by the time Summer League wraps up, and I'll take in sort of the major AAU high school tournaments at the end of July. I'll take a week off in August usually to really do nothing. That's like my vacation.
Yep.
And then, you know, once the second week of August comes around, it's, you know, back to watching the film and getting, you know, sort of, you know, previewing, you know, the next year's class, you know, looking at, you know, always start with the seniors, the guys I know are going to be in that class, and then work from there.
Sounds good. It's definitely a lot of work, but we do all appreciate reading all the work that you do. And I appreciate you coming on the podcast and sharing some of your thoughts. Just remind everyone where they can read your stuff and where they can find you on Twitter.
Find me on Twitter at NBA Draft Blog. You go to NBADraftBlog.com for the scouting reports and interviews, and on ProBasketballTalk.com and RotoWorld.com for NBC Sports. That's where you'll find mock drafts and top 10 lists and, you know, all the things where you're just looking for a quick read on these guys.
Cool, Ed. It was great having you on. Hopefully everybody got a fair bit of insight out of your vast knowledge. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.